We're in New Hampshire.
Made it.
Give me 8 meters. Stop.
Wetlands, they're in every state.
It's a crab right there.
A crab where?
Right here.
They're critical for waterways, wildlife, and the rest of us.
Function almost as kidneys in the environment.
Can you tell us what's going on here?
Styrofoam and beer cans.
A Gatorade bottle.
So who's keeping an eye on these ecosystems?
Watch out for pink flowers.
We have a lot of work to do on our waters.
These are the Wetland Watchers.
Okay, let's go to the car.
We're meeting the New Hampshire field crew at New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services.
We're in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where we're about to go all NWCA on this wetland. You know, NWCA, part of NARS. But don't worry, I had to remind myself. It's the National Wetlands Condition Assessment, which looks at the health and ecological status of the country's wetlands.
It's really helpful in developing state-level monitoring and assessment techniques.
So did you just take a selfie?
Always.
You always take a selfie?
Yes, I do.
That's part of your routine?
Yes. In our lab, we actually have a selfie competition every year with the interns.
Last episode, we told you that 2016 is the wetlands year under study in the EPA's National Aquatic Resource Survey. In other years, NARS looks at coastal waters, lakes and reservoirs, and rivers and streams.
So what's your go-to gear for wetlands assessing?
Since today's dry, I'm just going to put on my boots.
Okay.
And then long pants, t-shirt, hat.
Sunscreen?
Yes. Bug spray.
Crews in New Hampshire are monitoring 8 sites.
4 of ours are salt marshes. Salt marshes are rare on a national level.
Now it's this salt marsh's turn.
And I see some rusted, there's some water.
We've timed our visit to around low tide on this late August morning.
So this one's not far from a McDonald's and a shopping center, are they?
Right.
I think when people think about wetlands, they're going to think that they're in the picturesque.
The wetlands are everywhere. So we have a site in Hampton where the metropolis of Hampton Beach is included in the circle that we're going to measure. There's houses, there's hotels, there's roads that are busy, there's people walking around. Then we have a site in Pittsburgh where we're probably the first humans to walk on the wetland in, like, ever, it felt like.
It's like up on the Canadian border.
Yeah. This wetland, yeah, there's a McDonald's right there, but the reality is that McDonald's is probably has no impact on this particular wetland.
How's it going?
There are 11 of us surveying this Portsmouth salt marsh, divided into teams focusing on vegetation, soils, and buffer characteristics.
So the way we do it is we set the flag to mark our X spot, and we have to set up these 4 radii that go out from the X point, north, south, east, and west. So that's north, this is south.
Within 100 square meters, we map out 5 veg plots, 1 soil plot, and 13 buffer plots.
Give me 8 meters. Stop. 2 meters. That's good.
As the teams get to work, we start by looking at vegetation with Sandy Crystal. That's where we need to begin.
Because we have a lot of the endangered plant around, we've already walked by quite a bit of it.
The pink
one. Which one's the endangered plant?
The one with the pink flowers like we saw at Seabrook?
The one we saw in Seabrook, yeah.
Yeah.
We do not want to step on any salt marsh edulinas.
This is crazy to me because it looks to me like there are only 2 kinds of plants in the
whole.
Well,
there are very few. We often fill up the front of a partial sheet in the salt marsh. It's very, this may have a few more. It is amazing the difference between doing this site, a salt marsh, and a floodplain site is like night and day. We have 5 plots here and, you know, we may have like 8 to 10 different plants that can tolerate the conditions that are found in the salt marsh. In floodplains, you have a whole lot of species, and you know, we'll get to like 60, 70 species in a floodplain habitat.
Within a 40 meter soil and veg radius, smaller survey areas allow for the careful measurement this study demands.
It enables us to take a really close look rather than looking at a big 10 meter by 10 meter plot. You could easily not see them. Some of the plants fall over, and unless you kind of move them with your hand, You often can't see some of the smaller plants growing underneath.
So what do we have here?
A lot of the salt marsh has salt marsh hay. And if you look at a salt marsh and you see that it has these kind of cowlick appearances, that's the salt marsh hay, and it's often used for erosion control purposes.
We also find short cordgrass and glasswort.
Yep, it's sometimes called pickle plant. You can actually eat it. It tastes quite good, especially if it has the salt from the tide. We were at a site and I took a bite and it had been raining. I'm like, without the salt, it doesn't really taste like anything. So right now we've found three species in this spot. I sort of feel like I'm combing the grass with my hands to see what else I can find.
In this particular spot, it looks like you need some hair gel to make it all stand up.
That's right. There's the distichus here. The salt meadow hay has a slight yellow-green color. And this distichus, which is called salt grass, actually has a little bluish color.
In a patch about 2 square feet, we see a small, pretty pinkish-purple plant. It's a rare salt marsh gerardia, or seaside angelinus.
Usually it's kind of sprinkled around the marsh, so kind of interesting to see concentration of it. A lot of the plants in these habitats, like salt marshes, you have limited areas. If the salt marsh hydrology changes, if the water, if anybody diverts water or does any excavation, it can change how salty the water is that reaches these plants. And these plants do well because they're adapted to live in places where the salt water may inundate them daily or periodically.
All right, woody shrubs and saplings, 0.5 meter to 5 meters high. It's all this stuff here.
Dave Niels and Ted Walsh are also taking a census.
Herbs, forbs, and grasses. 40 to 70.
They're looking at layers of vegetation and other natural cover within the salt marsh buffer.
All right, for impacts. We have some trash. We have styrofoam and beer cans.
Collecting data on this Portsmouth site is labor-intensive, to be sure, but it's nothing like Pittsburgh, New Hampshire, along the Canadian border.
There's a stream that's literally about 40 feet wide, so it's not very wide at all, but it's 4 feet deep, so you can't wade it, so we have to bushwhack a canoe in and ferry our stuff across.
We just leave the canoe there because no one will go to that site.
They even found an intact, undisturbed moose skeleton, its bones bleached by the sun.
You're sampling the soil.
Correct.
You've done.
Meanwhile, the soils team is digging a hole about 2 feet wide, and they need to get to a little over 3 feet deep, or deeper if they don't hit water. Though that won't be a problem this time. They hammer sharpened metal cylinders in several locations around the plot, flush with the top of the soil to get the right amount of volume for core samples.
So we have four layers, and we break it out by color mainly, and then how it feels and roots.
The soil reveals its secrets like a genie in a bottle.
Rub it. Take the roots out, good luck. So I'm just gonna rub it 10 times. Because there's a lot of, so this is halfway decomposed, so OE.
And just like the others, the soils team carefully fills in forms for study by the EPA.
I need the horizon name.
Oh, OA3.
Thank you.
I rubbed it, just to rub it 10 times and see how many fibers are left, and it's not much at all. So if you have less than 17%, it's a muck, and it rubs down on basically nothing. Even those roots kind of decay to nothing.
Yeah, it's interesting. For all of the groups today, the national assessment basically has given you a field Scantron sheet, and everyone is filling out lots of bubbles, like they're taking the SAT.
Yes. And only write in all capitals, and then your twos can't be looped, you can't cross any sevens.
You're grading the wetland, and the EPA is going to grade you.
Yes.
When they're finished, they make sure to backfill the holes so animals don't suffer any surprises at the hands of this survey.
Hot. It's getting hot.
Yep.
You want to know why? It's high noon.
It's high noon. All right, I'm going to turn it off for a little bit in case we get some more.
Next time on The Wetland Watchers.
Certain areas of the country had more wetlands in poor condition than we might have suspected.
What can we hope to learn?
Invasive type plant species that serve to stress our wetlands.
And what can we try to do to protect these invaluable ecosystems?
Wetlands that are in better health and able to provide even more benefits.
The Wetland Watchers is a production of the New England Interstate Water Pollution Control Commission and is funded in part by a grant from the Environmental Protection Agency. Survey site interviews were conducted by Kimberly Roth and Richard Friesner. Thanks to Karen Dudley with the National Resources Conservation Service, and to Dave Niels, Sandy Crystal, Ted Walsh, Amanda Bridge, and Jill Pavlik with the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. Music included Running Waters by Jason Shaw, Slow Burn by Kevin MacLeod, Take Me Higher by Jazzar, and Night Owl by Broke for Free. I'm Ian Bush. This is The Wetland Watchers.